Hey friends, before we dive in, my new book, Sowing a Hidden Seed, Daily Prayers for Your Child's Spiritual Growth, is out now, available on intentionalparents.org exclusively, so go check that out. Christmas is coming. What a great Christmas present to get your family praying. And don't miss our upcoming retreats, the Intentional Fatherhood Retreat, February 19 through 21, 2026, in Costa Mesa, California, and the Intentional Motherhood Retreat. We announced this April 23rd through 25th, 2026 in Franklin, Tennessee. Please come out and know that early bird pricing is on both of those events, so check that out. These retreats are spaces to pause, breathe, and invest in your spiritual formation as a parent. So learn more, get your tickets now at intentionalparents.org, and let's get into this week's episode. Welcome to the Intentional Parents Podcast. Intentional exists to help parents in their God-given task to raise passionate Jesus followers. We exist to bring hope, help, and healing to families. Each week, we will talk about anything from parenting, marriage, lifestyle, and what it looks like to follow Jesus in our time. Intentional is made up of Phil and Diane Comer and Brooke and Elizabeth Moser. I am Brooke, and the funny thing is, we are all family. Elizabeth is Phil and Diane's daughter, so we're a family figuring this thing out together. We hope this podcast feels like you're sitting with us in our home talking about how to do this thing called life together. Elizabeth and I are your hosts. Let's get into this week's podcast. All right, welcome back to the Intentional Parents Podcast. Today is a fun conversation with Elizabeth and I. And a couple things I want to say. First, thank you for everybody who has been so generous to rate and subscribe and leave a comment. It has meant the world to us. And if you haven't had a chance to do that, even just pause for 15 seconds and do that. That's always a huge gift to us to just know how you're ingesting all of this and how you're moving through the world and how it's helping you move through the world. So please let us know that. And then also just a big thank you to Dr. Barry Gridley. Wasn't that a fun episode? I had a great time.
So good. I was literally just a little behind the scenes.
Yeah.
I was upstairs with the kids while you guys were recording that. And I kept coming out and like leaning over the top of the stairs so that I could listen because it was so good.
He did so.
All while trying to keep everybody quiet, which was somewhat successful.
I don't think it came through the audio. Even if it did, it's real life.
At one point you texted me and you said, the front door's open.
Oh yeah. How did the front door just get open?
Scarlett came in and it just didn't get closed all the way.
Yeah, I was feeling it was really cold all of a sudden and I couldn't see the door from where I was sitting, but I was like, it feels like a door is open. And then the front door is just wide open. But yes, thank you to Dr. Barry Gridley. He's a huge gift to the world. And it's been so funny because handfuls of you, I don't know who obviously, but handfuls of you have been reaching out to him, trying to get him to be your therapist. And all I can say is, good on you. That's a great idea. He's an incredible human and thankful for his presence in our life for sure. Mm-hmm. Today is also just one last thing before we get into today's topic. Your parents, they finally moved in across the street.
They did.
And that's a big deal for us. Mm-hmm. That's a big deal. Lots of mornings of Scarlett going over there and having tea.
She doesn't have her own room. She shares a room with her two little sisters. And so she's like, Mom, I can just go over there and it's quiet and peaceful. She's loving that.
Yeah, so what we can't give her right now. But but that's just a life update. We'll talk more about that later. But today we wanted to actually talk about something that's close to Elizabeth and I's heart. Mm-hmm. We've been in pastoral ministry for 17, almost 18 years now. Mm-hmm. And we've seen a lot of different things. And we've seen a lot of people come to church. And we've seen a lot of people go from church. Some take massive breaks. Some never return. COVID's a massive part of that. Mm-hmm. And so we wanted to actually just take a pause, take a minute to just talk about why go to church. Why do we actually go to church? Because I think that question in one sense is common. And we would go, there's a couple things that come to mind right away. Mm-hmm. But there's also, I think, deeper misconceptions of why we go to church and maybe even a misunderstanding. And so I thought it'd be fun for us to go through this. I've been reading a book. I've read it a couple times, but going through it again, a book by Ronald Rolheiser, no doubt. called The Holy Longing. So we're taking thoughts from his book. He did a great job categorizing these, I think, and he put a list together. So we'll put that book in the show notes if you want to really get into this more. But these are his concepts that we're going to take and talk about today. And I thought he just did a brilliant job with that. So that's where I want to go.
Yeah, I remember the first time you read them to me, and we had been talking about this topic, but also having conversations of how do we make it not legalistic? How do we approach that? And then you came across this chapter and read me, how many reasons does he have?
I think it's nine.
Yeah. And nine it was reasons. Like everyone, we were like, oh my gosh, this is so good. This is so good.
This is so
Let's
helpful.
Just talk about these nine things. But I feel like it's important before we do, we fully recognize that this is a loaded topic for some and that the church as a whole is not perfect. In fact, she's greatly flawed.
Mm-hmm.
And it's full of sinful people, just like you and me. Pastors are not exempt from that.
No.
And there are probably hundreds, if not thousands of you listening who have been deeply wounded by churches,
mm-hmm.
by leadership that you thought was for you, that you experienced that not being the case or things mishandled, or your own wounds being brought up among the leadership. And we know that's a real thing. We've had that experience.
I was going to say, we've experienced that before too.
Yeah.
It's really sad. So really hard.
It's really sad. It's not supposed to be that way. And mm-hmm. yet it does happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish that I could say it will not ever happen again, but I know sadly that it will. And I also know that God is a beautiful redeemer and healer. And that he can heal those wounds. He can even use churches to heal those wounds inflicted by churches. And I know that for some, the reason of not going is because of that, and that they're so afraid that's going to happen again. And that's a legitimate fear. So I just feel like that's important to say that we're not unaware of that. We are fully aware of that and still working through some of our own experiences of that. So just know that we do have that in our view as we're talking about this. And we also are parents of still young children. And we recognize that there is no service time, what service time it is.
None.
When your children are still napping, that does not somehow ruin a nap. Like we recognize the very real practical challenges.
Or even if they're not nap takers, that they're going to feel comfortable in that space, or they're going to actually get something
from it. You can sit through church and they'll go to the nursery.
If your family's constantly sick, the fact that we just got done being sick and now I'm going to put them in a room potentially with a bunch of kids that are sick. So
I remember a couple years ago, right before COVID, I can't remember how old the girls were, but they were sick for like 3 months straight. And it felt like if they ever got better and I went to church, they just got sick again. Yeah. And I know that deters a lot of people from going. And we're going to hopefully give some different perspective that might just change your thinking on that a little bit or just cause you to just think about it.
Well, I'm sorry, I'm cutting you off.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, because I think you're going there is, you know, this isn't our concept in the sense that this is nothing new. This is actually ancient and it's actually very biblical. And in Hebrews chapter 10, I think you're going to read it right there, honey, but Hebrews chapter 10 it specifically says this, and it's even for our good and for our flourishing. So do you want to maybe start us there, and then we'll get into these nine things and we'll walk through them.
You are enjoying content brought to you by Intentional, a crowdfunded nonprofit that desires to help families and marriages all around the world in the area of discipleship and spiritual formation. This offering is completely free, thanks to the generosity of our growing community of Legacy Builders. Legacy Builders is a group of people from all around the world that give monthly to fuel this dream that we have in our hearts of seeing discipleship to Jesus in the family become a way of life. A monthly gift of $5, $10, or even $30 can continue to fuel this ministry forward. Our dream is to invite people like you to join and partner with us at a financial level and see this work integrated into families. So as you listen to this podcast, would you prayerfully consider joining us? Would you allow the Spirit to lead you, even if it's just to a few dollars a month? Thank you so much, and may the Spirit of Jesus give you wisdom, clarity, and joy as you pray about joining us. And if you want to join today, go to intentionalparents.org and click on give. Yeah, Hebrews 10, starting in verse 23, says, "Let us hold unswervingly to the hope we profess, for he who promised is faithful. And let us consider how we may spur one another on towards love and good deeds, not giving up meeting together," that's the going to church,
yeah,
"as some are in the habit of doing, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day approaching." I just love that. Like, we've obviously, that the first part of that gets quoted a lot, like spurring one another on to love and good deeds. But it's right in that very same verse that says not giving up meeting together. Now, obviously, you can meet together with other believers in other spaces than just a church building on Sunday. Yeah. But I think in our cultural context, the more likely place that you're going to meet together with a bunch of other believers is going to be at church on Sunday. Or maybe if you have a community group that you're a part of, that would be another place. But
yes,
those are just the practical, intentional places that we cannot give up meeting together.
Yeah.
And I love that it ends with, "and all the more as you see the day approaching." Like, this was written thousands of years ago. Like, we are much closer to the day approaching than even when this verse was written. And I just love how the Bible is so timeless. Great like that.
Well, one more foundational thing to point out that I think is important as we get into these nine is what we're going to propose here is not a series of reasons why you might want to go to church,
yeah,
but why you should go to church. So I know a fancy saying, and a funny saying rather, in therapy is you should stop. You shouldn't should yourself all the time. I should do this. I shouldn't do that. I should do this. Like, feeling the pressure. I know some therapists say stop shoulding yourself. Mm-hmm. Comical play on words. That said, though, there are certain things we actually should do. And mm-hmm. this isn't why you might feel, this is why you should go to church. So that's what we're going to be highlighting. So that's the foundation that we're launching from for clarity. So the first one.
And let me just add one more thing. That applies to a lot of things. There's a lot of things that we don't feel like always doing, like exercise, for example. There are a few people, maybe like me, who actually enjoys it. Not every day, but most of the time I enjoy it. Most people don't enjoy it, but they enjoy how they feel after. It's one of those, they know that, not to use the word should that you just said not to use, but that they should.
Oh, well, you should work out because your body was designed to move.
It's a part of caring for your body.
Unfortunately, you can't get away from it. And also this morning when it was dark and 21 degrees out and I had to at least run 3 miles, I was like, I'm not looking forward to this at all. And even on the run, I was like, still not looking forward to it. Almost got done. I was like, can't wait for this to be done. So yeah, some days it's easier.
Are you glad you did it?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Very glad. Yeah. It's like, I have to choose. How am I going to fight off pain and depression today? And, how am I going to fight that? And usually, exercise, eating well, and work are the three things that pouring into something that's bigger than me, eating well, which is always a challenge because I love food and you make good food and we have small children, which means I can always use an excuse to be like, guys, let's eat some more. So that and then exercise. But anyway, that's not what we're here to talk about. The first reason why you should go to church, because it's good to not be alone.
Hmm.
This is a really interesting thing. We're social by nature. All of us as humans are. And when we attempt to make spirituality, especially our relationship with God, a one-on-one thing, a private thing only, a private affair, we reject a very part of the very nature that is inside of us.
Yeah.
And that's a really important reminder, is you should absolutely have an intimate, beautiful, deep relationship with Jesus. But you can't get all that you need just from having that one relationship. Something I know we've said here before, but always refreshes my memory, helps me a lot, is there's nowhere in scripture where God says all you need is God. He actually said what you need is him and community and experience and love. He didn't ever just isolate it to one thing. So I think it is interesting how when we sit and remember, like, okay, one of the reasons we need to do this is because it's not good for us to be alone. Genesis 1, especially with man. And I would say in general with men, it's not good for a man to be alone. Like, I completely agree that not only for loneliness, but also for your own flourishing. Any thoughts on that before we go to number two?
Yeah, well, I just feel like 2020 and the pandemic highlighted this tenfold for everybody. You know, at first it was real kind of nice to be alone. You could work from home. You can be home all the time. It felt a little bit like vacation. But then as time wore on, you know, we now know anxiety, depression, mental health epidemic just went through the roof. Stuff that was already there, but it just accelerated it, mostly because we were alone. We were doing life alone. And I think there's even been more of a tendency coming out of it to continue to do life alone, because when you get used to operating in one way, it starts to feel normal. Mm. And yet we were meant to live all together, working together, serving each other. I was even just talking to my mom about this.
Yeah.
On the note of getting used to operating a certain way, you know, they just moved and they're across the street, and we've had seasons where we haven't lived near family, a couple years in LA and 4 years here with no family. And we've had amazing community, but they've all been people who are in a very similar life stage of ours, have a bunch of young kids, and we don't just have one or two kids, we have an army. So we've had very little practical help in that regard. And so we were just talking about, she's like, I'm across the street. I want the kids to come over. And I had to tell her, this is going to be so great, but you're going to have to like remind me to reach out for help, because I'm used to figuring out how to do it without help.
How to do it by yourself.
You know, so on that note of, it's so easy to not even be able to see how much we need to just be in a room full of people who love Jesus.
Yes.
And I can't tell you how many times, you know, so our entire marriage, you've always gone to church before me, and I'm always getting all the kids there myself. And I can't tell you how many times it's felt like, especially when our kids were babies, like it's felt like, gosh, why am I even here? Like just to get out of the house just felt like overwhelming and exhausting. But the minute I just got there, even if I couldn't sit through the whole service, even if I, you know, had to be up with my kids or was holding a baby, there's something about being with other people, seeing their faces, seeing their tears, seeing their joy, and just being together that really does kind of awaken our soul.
Yeah. And it's imperative for us to be the types of people that can recognize the tendency to want to be alone all the time and to feed that all the time is not good for you. It's not good for your family. It's not good for your marriage. It's not, it's leaving a part of you, not fully developed, underdeveloped actually. So number two, that's number one, because it is not good to be alone. Secondly, to take our rightful place humbly within the family of humanity.
I love this one.
Yeah. So to take our rightful place humbly within the family of humanity. You know, we have blood family, we have blood relatives, but we are people that are part of a greater world. And so when we join a church, there's actually humility that is baked into it. Because if you go into a church and you act, as an example, if you, it is all about you, your relationships, how people serve you, how the church serves you. Yeah, the church serves you, how the preacher did or didn't do what you liked, how the music was, how or how you did not like, or whatever the case is, it's like the beginning of the end. And so a lot of these moments, I know I've seen it so many times as a pastor, where people are so upset that things are not going a certain way that they expected. And you have to realize, like, when you start entering into church specifically, you have to give up elitism. You have to give up this desire to have it your way all the time, because you have to get along with other humans. And this is one of the greatest obstacles to church participation, because people just don't, they're like, I don't want to do it because I don't like it that way. And so it's a huge barrier, but our job is to recognize we have a part to play, and it's a humble part. It's one that you come to serve. And one of the things I love about church, why church, is it's a place for you to exercise your gifts. It's a place for you to come and give of yourself, your attention, your money, your time, and to be there to bless others. And when you get that reversed, and I see it all the time, you're miserable. And it doesn't, and it's always the beginning of the end.
Well, I think when you get it reversed, which I think is oftentimes the lens the church is being looked at through right now is how does it serve me? What do I get out of it? And then sometimes if we're getting what we feel like we need, then maybe we'll serve. And if we're looking at it through that lens, we will never find a church that we like, because no church is going to be perfect.
You
may love the music and not like the teaching, or love the teaching and not like the music, or you may love both of those things, but you don't like the kids' classes or whatever. Like, and it is, that said, it's important to find a church that you connect with and not just go and be miserable and you don't connect with any of it. It's important to find a church that you agree with the teaching and you feel like you can worship, and like, and that sometimes can take time, and church shopping is no fun whatsoever. Yes. But I think it's also so important to be going in, like you said, with not just how do I feel about all the things that are happening, but it's where do I feel like, where do I see a need, and do I have a gifting that could meet that need?
Yes.
And it might not even be something that you particularly love to do, but your church has a really big need for it. And so maybe you start there.
Yeah.
Or I think so often, you know, people can sometimes join a church and want to immediately lead something or have a big role. And I think there's just so much beauty in seasons of playing the really small roles.
Oh,
and
the
serving
smaller,
in
the
kids and being a greeter. And they're not, a small role is probably the wrong word. They're all of equal importance and
they're
value.
Hidden roles. They're hidden roles. And I think you're right. And I would also add that the scriptures are true that when we're faithful in little hidden areas, God does make us faithful over much. So for the person that's listening is like, I'm anxious to get into more leadership. I'm so excited to do this. I just can't wait. Maybe you're young or maybe you're old, wherever you're at in your journey. Faithfulness in the daily mundane tasks is massive. And I'll tell you, as somebody who's served on so many different teams with so many different people over the years, your attitude, especially when you're given something small, is everything. You know, when you can be handed a tiny task and not be above it, but you can embrace it. Mm-hmm. I remember one time I had a team of people that I was working with, and one of the guys on the team, he was a music dude, and he was a very talented guy. And the whole band was practicing, and we did this thing when, you know, we were playing, someone would go, you know, down the hall, make coffee for everybody. And whoever wasn't playing usually, and this day he wasn't. And so I just said, hey, would you mind just going, you know, make coffee really quick? And he made some crazy comment like, what are you talking? I'm not a coffee. I don't do coffee, you know, and this whole kind of demeanor and attitude. And I remember thinking, I'm so sad for that dude, because he's so talented, and his heart and his disposition towards what he's too good for is going to sabotage his future. And he wasn't there for very long, because obviously that plays out into thousands of other ways. But I'll just say, like, that, it so matters. Humility, coming in to serve, having that posture, recognizing we go to church to serve, to be a blessing, not the other way around per se. That's not the main point.
Yeah. You know, I heard, I can't even remember where, but heard a while back somebody talking about really the only place that we see a gathering of people with multiple generations, from infants to elderly, from abled to disabled, all different social, economical statuses, races. It's the only place that we see a mixture like that is in the church.
Yeah.
And think about, even if you're looking at it just through the perspective of, is this good for my kids? We all want to do what's good for our kids. Think about exposing your kids to that week after week after week. That's a beautiful thing. That's something we don't get in our culture anymore. Unless really, I mean, I can't think of another place that we get that on a regular, rhythmic basis. And we all, because we're human, we tend to gravitate towards people who look like us, dress like us, live like us. You know, we're typically the people we are friends with are people who are like us. And I think it is so good for us, for our own formation, for our families, mm-hmm. to be with a bunch of people who are both like us and unlike us.
Yeah.
Because that's how we grow and change.
And that's, I love that you're pointing that out, because there is so much beauty that happens with all three generations. I remember someone asked me, like, what's a healthy range, age range in a church? And what the most healthy we know is three generations. You need mm-hmm. to have those who are in their upper stages of life, middle and younger years. And the more generations that are represented, the healthier, the more balanced, yeah. the more beautiful it is. And so
what does Proverbs say about gray hair is a crown of wisdom?
Yeah.
Like, I want to be surrounded with people with crowns of wisdom.
I really do believe that translation is those with gray hair or no hair is a crown of wisdom. And I believe that.
There you go. I see your crown.
I'm believing for it. Anyway, I think that said, number three, let's go to number three. And yeah. I want to point out as well, obviously everyone gets this, but obviously we're not experts on this, but we do see this as being something that is really important. And Elizabeth said, you want to do right by your kids. And I think right now there's a lot of people that are looking at church and thinking, I don't want to go to church. And there's also a really important part where you may need to go to church, not even just for you alone. It may also just be for your children. And mm-hmm. there's certain seasons where we have to be aware that sacrificial living is a part of the Bible, but it's especially lived out in your parenting. Mm-hmm. And there's times when we commit to certain things. And I know Elizabeth and I are in that stage now where our kids are having more social lives as they get older. And we're having to commit to things and do things that are like, oh, wow, I'd rather not. But we see the value added for their development, for their relationship with Jesus, for their relational equity with other friends, you know, so we do stuff like that mm-hmm. often. And that's a big part of it.
Well, I think maybe just a quick example before we move on that just highlights this is our daughter Scarlett is 10 and she just got baptized last Sunday.
Oh, yeah.
Now, her desire to be baptized did not come out of her stellar parents who did a great job talking to her about baptism and encouraging her to pray about it.
I did get to baptize her, though.
You did.
So Duke and Scarlett.
No, I'm saying that came after. But her first, we weren't like, you know, Scarlett, we'd really like you to pray about getting baptized. We're just in the throes of it. I hadn't even really thought that we should start talking to her about that. She's like at the age where she could understand it.
Yeah.
But our church is, it's a super old church building. And the baptismal has been like totally out of commission for a very long time. So we very rarely do them. We do them in the river across the street from the church. But we just got it all fixed and we have a proper baptismal that we can use year round.
That's
so
cool.
We've started doing monthly baptisms. And all it took was a few months of Scarlett seeing other people, mm-hmm. because she's with this group of believers, being baptized to really like impress on her heart. It's like all she could talk about, I want to be baptized. Which then spurred us to have conversations to see if she really understood what that meant, if she was really ready. But had she not been in a group of believers, seeing them week after week, I don't think that spark would have been ignited. So I think that just highlights not anything we've done. That came from just showing up week after week. She is a part of our church.
She, you know, that's a really important part of all this, is that if you, sometimes you think, how do I get plugged in, or how do I build relationships, or how can I, like, if I'm just coming once to a service once a week, like maybe that's your stage, that's all you can do. Mm-hmm. But when your kids get to a certain age, can I just encourage you, get as involved as you possibly can.
Yeah.
And why I'm saying that is because I know for us, we have seen the more that we involve our kids and ask them to do stuff and give them stretch assignments, like, hey, you, this might be a little bit beyond you, but I think you could do it. I think you should try. It has been amazing that the level of confidence that it's built in them. They're volunteering. Scarlett will do slides because she's very musical, so she can follow all the words. She's better at slides than all the adults, better than me, better than anybody that I know that can do it. She's like running slides. Then she'll sing sometimes on Sunday. And then I know Duke will jump in and do various things around the church. He makes coffee for everybody at the church, which is crazy. Pour overs. He's like, he's got scales and boiling water. Yes, he's 13 and he's doing this. And he's like double Chemex, the whole deal. Like, it's so interesting to see how including them and helping them get involved, but then also I think leadership teams understanding that and letting them be involved mm-hmm. is one of the most amazing things. If you want to sell your kids on the idea of church, give them opportunities to serve and to get to be a part of the serving. Because, right, like serving mm-hmm. is a part of it. It's coming to give your gifts to the church. And each week our kids get to do that. That's because our leadership team values it. But I think it's also mm-hmm. because we nudge them in that direction. Like, hey, our family goes to serve. So what are you doing today? Which yeah. thing are you going to sign up for? Where do you see yourself getting involved? And that honestly makes it a lot easier when you're like trying to get out of the house on a Sunday. Like, okay, let's go to church. Well, why are we? Well, we're going because we are there to give our lives yeah. to other people to help. Like, of course we're going to be there. And Sunday mornings, we're never dragging kids out of bed. We're never like, oh my gosh, except the little ones, because they don't understand that it's Sunday. So they get, they'll be sleeping. But outside of that, the older ones, we're not dragging them to church. So yeah. it's a really important part. Thirdly, we gotta speed up just a little bit here.
That was an important one, though.
That was an important. Yeah. Number three, because God calls us there. I just want to read directly from Ronald Rollheiser. These yeah. are his words really quick. He says this: "The Holy Spirit is not a piece of private property, neither is God's call. The Judeo-Christian God is clear. Spirituality is not a private search for what is highest in oneself, but a communal search for the face of God. The call of God is double. Worship divinity and link yourself to humanity. Hmm. There are two great equal commandments, love God and love neighbor." And basically he goes on to say, if you're going to walk with Jesus, have relationship with Jesus, you have to walk with the church. You can't separate the two. God calls us to love him and to love others. And when we isolate it to just loving God, we're missing a whole part of that. So it is our call to love him and love others. And the primary space we work that out is church. Now, some of that's work. More people that work from home, that's going to be different now than you're working that out in your family. But three, because God calls us there. He calls us as mm-hmm. people to that. Anything on that before I go to number four?
No, I think that just even goes well with the scripture that we read at the beginning, you know, that don't, not giving up the meeting together, other translations, don't forsake the gathering together of the saints, you know, and it is not, like you said, it's not the only place.
Yeah.
That should be the starting point that other relationships and loving our neighbor comes out of. We should love our literal neighbor. Mm-hmm. That's a fantastic mm-hmm. place to do it.
Yeah.
But oftentimes our neighbors are not other believers.
No.
Our street is like the primary place for evangelism, for lack of a better word, to show the gospel, to live the gospel. Mm-hmm. That's beautiful. But that's not the same as gathering together with other believers that spur you on, that give you the fuel to continue to do that, to love others well. So yeah. I think it's a both and, because I can yeah. just imagine people being like, well, wait, I don't go to church and I still love God and I still feel like I'm connected to other people. And I think you absolutely can be, but I think it's such a foundational grounding thing that that is just really important, as we've talked about.
It's huge. Yeah. It's huge. If you're enjoying this content and you want to go deeper, we have an amazing resource that we want to tell you about. It's the Intentional Film Series, Raising Passionate Jesus Followers. Now, this is an incredible tool for you for spiritual formation in the family. And we created this film series to help parents in their God-given task to raise and disciple their own children. Now, our hope is that we're able to help you and give you some of the tools that I know we so desperately need, as we're in the process of raising our kids, and Phil and Diane have actually raised their kids. This is a 9-session film series on the process of what raising a passionate Jesus follower actually looks like. There's some workable solutions in here. There's a bunch of wisdom from the scriptures, and there's a bunch of practical help in your journey as you are raising your children. We cover all sorts of things like parental roles, goals versus values. What is discipline versus punishment? How do I create a heart of obedience in my child where they actually want to obey? What does a heart of self-control look like? Or how do I even help my child in the process of character development? We cover that and so many more things. You can use this film series in a variety of ways. You can use it at your home, preferably with your spouse if that's applicable, with a group of friends or in your community, or even through your local church. All you need to do is head over to our website, intentionalparents.org, click on film series, and then follow the prompts. We have a bunch of other resources there that you can check out, but we do pray that this blesses you in your pursuit of raising passionate Jesus followers. This one's going to sting a little bit, but I really like it. Because I think it's so true. Number four, one of the reasons why do we go to church? Number four, to dispel my fantasies about myself.
Mm.
Obviously, we know this. The church is compromised, right? There mm-hmm. are sinful people leading the church and yeah. in the church. It's compromised. It's dirty. It's sinful. But just like our blood families, they're real. Yeah. It's a real relationship. And how many people with blood relatives, family of origin, has this like whole weird dynamic mixed in where you're like totally connected and hopefully in some ways, if things are relatively healthy, you like each other or spend time with each other, but you're also like completely annoyed by each other and inconvenienced by each other's idiosyncrasies, and you love them, but you're like, oh, this is really hard. Just the other night, I was talking to my mom. I hadn't talked to her for a couple of weeks and had a conversation, and like as any family, you just got to work through some stuff and had to work through some stuff and was just reminded, like, I love my mom, and it's also hard to have family because you have to work on those relationships.
The closer you are, the harder it is sometimes.
Yeah. And it's good and right. And I'm so glad that we have the kind of relationship where we can openly talk. At the same time, with church, most of the time, if it becomes inconvenient, we just go, I'm out. Mm-hmm. I'm done. I didn't like what that guy said. I didn't like how they acted. I'm going to isolate. And honestly, this is a massive nod to what's going on with extreme individualism. That's where this plays out. But honestly, we need to have a space where we share our life regularly with people that we can't lie to because they know our life, people that that know if we really are generous, if we really are noble, or if we're just, you know, putting on a front. And when we're in community, the truth about us emerges and the mm-hmm. fantasies about ourselves are dispelled because you didn't text the person back within your community that you said you would, and you're not talking to them and you're being a punk when you see them, and they're able to now see, like, whoa, 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 you have this beautiful facade, like once a week when I interact with you for an hour, actually most likely like 20 minutes before and after the gathering. And then when you start doing life with people, they see the real version of you, and it helps you remember, like, hey, we all are in the same place. We all need to dispel the fantasies about ourselves. So I know it's hard when these things become painfully obvious to us, but man, it is important. Mm-hmm. It is so important. So to dispel fantasies about yourself, you don't have any problems, so that's good. So you don't even have to worry about it.
Whatever.
You don't even have to worry about dispelling those fantasies. So you are perfect.
Very not true.
I want to, any thoughts on that before I go to number five?
No, I've got nothing.
Okay. Number five, and this is Rollheiser's language, but I think it's good because 10,000 saints have told me so. Mm. Anybody that you know that's gone, that has done well in the arena of faith, or that has gone before you, whether that be biblical, through church history, even current, mm-hmm. there's a common denominator with people who are, I would say, not only successful in life, and I'm not talking about financial success, like healthy, well-rounded, calm, regulated humans who operate as Jesus does in a way where they live as Jesus did and try to put that love into the world. I think that's mm-hmm. a good example, or sorry, a good descriptor. But anybody that you know that has that kind of lifestyle and that kind of fruit and that kind of love has gone and does go regularly to church and is deeply connected to community. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a really, really important thing to remember. Like, all of a sudden, if you and I just eject from this really important rhythm, what are the ramifications for our life, but also for our kids' lives and generations down? Mm-hmm. And I want to be careful not to make church Jesus. Church is not salvation.
No, it won't solve all your problems.
No, but it's a rhythm that puts you into a place like we've been talking about, where you have to face who you really are, where you have mm-hmm. to actually live honestly, where you have to actually give and not just take, if it's going to be a healthy situation. And so that's a really important thing that, down from Mother Teresa to any other wonderful saint in history, mm-hmm. they've had regular rhythms of connecting and going to church, which is a big part of it. So I know that you have to be connected to these two things. You cannot do you cannot do your relationship with Jesus alone. You have to do it with others. You mm-hmm. will never get as far. So I know that's a big one. Any other thoughts on that one?
Yeah, well, it just made me think of our conversation we had with Jerry Sitzer a while back.
Oh,
we
yeah.
can link Jerry. Those I miss two episodes. Jerry. I know.
Jerry, we're going to have so you back good. On soon, buddy. I miss you if you're listening. I miss you, buddy.
But we were talking more in the context of the incredible loss he's experienced and what that journey was like. But one thing that was really interesting that came just out of getting to know him and our conversation with him is he was explaining how important it was for him to be involved in a church and have a close community of Jesus followers around him in his incredible loss and grief.
Yeah.
And a couple of things to note that he said that I think, you know, he's much older than us, much wiser than us, and is, you know, in the last part of his life. And he said when he was in the depths of grief after losing his wife, his daughter, and his mother all instantly in a car accident and becoming a single father of three children, and he continued to go to church, and he said, I couldn't sing. I couldn't. All I did was cry. And, but I stood there and I heard everyone singing around me. And he said, the church believed for me. And then we, which I just think is, gosh, that's so powerful. That's what an illustration of why we need to be surrounded by people.
Yes.
And then he went on to explain, I can't remember if it was on the episode or just in our side conversations, but that he was a part of that church for 40 years. At one point, he left for like a 10-year span because his kids needed kind of a different youth group situation, but he's now back at that same church.
I know. I can't believe that.
And with the same community of people that are his like core friends. And being with him, the man has suffered greatly. He had any excuse, if anybody could be excused from getting their kids to church, it would be a single father who works full time, who'd lost his wife, who has three grieving children.
Oh, yeah.
If anybody could have said, I just can't, it's too hard, it would have been him, but he didn't. And obviously, he chose to do a whole lot of other things, not just go to church. That's not why he's doing as well as he is, but it is a piece.
Mm-hmm.
And sitting with him, he is one of the most peaceful, joyful, deeply rooted and grounded in Jesus people I've honestly ever been in the presence of.
Mm-hmm.
And I that spoke to me so much of just stay faithful. I can't imagine that 40 years at the same church has always looked great.
Oh my goodness.
Like, I'm sure there's been all sorts of different staff and all sorts of styles of music and ways of doing leadership and over the course of 40 years.
Yeah.
But I think that should tell us something. You drive through any city or town that's been there a while, and you have 100-year-old, 200-year-old, 300-year-old church buildings that are still standing.
Yeah.
That anything that has been such a regular, beautiful part of our history for so long, we need to be really slow to forsake.
Absolutely.
And again, it's not perfect.
Oh, yeah. Well, even with COVID, like, right, COVID happened, and then there was this switch that just flipped. And then all of a sudden everyone's like, well, the convenience of home is nice. And I would say, yes, it's nice for one dynamic. It's good for educating yourself on something of the scriptures, but you cannot have, it is not the same experience as going to a church with a group of people where you have to look people in the eyes and you have to communicate and you have to actually be honest. Maybe you have had a good week and maybe you've had a bad week, but you're trying to say you have a good week and someone just goes a little bit past that facade and says, hey, you don't seem like you're actually doing good. I know you said you are, but how are you actually doing? Or having people pray for you, or Eucharist, taking the bread and the cup and communion and prayer and worship and Holy Spirit activity. There's parts of that that can play out in an online situation, but it is not the fullness of it.
I'm just thinking of that saying, good is the enemy of best.
Yeah.
You know, it's good that we can access this online when you are really sick and you need to be home, or, you know, there are good things about it that we didn't used to have, but it can be the enemy of best. It's not the same as being with people.
And if this is like really bothering you that we're saying this, then I would just encourage you, exhort you, maybe would be a good word, to just ask yourself why. Why does that bother you? You know, why does that bother me that they would say it's like, just ask yourself, because I think there's other underlying things there. So number six, and this one's really close to home for us, really close to home. Number six, to help others carry their pathologies and to have them help me carry mine. Pathologies, pain, suffering, illness, the whole thing. Those are pathologies. We have gone through lots of different things in our life, lots of different levels and layers of suffering. And something that has always been consistent has been our church community. And mm-hmm. it's not even been the same church community. No. Different moments or seasons of suffering, but we've had community around us. Now, I will be first to say, sometimes church community, especially when you're suffering, doesn't know what to do with your suffering. So they'll yep. say a lot of like really unfortunate things, which we've talked about before, unfortunate things that they mean
trying
well, but
to make
they,
it better.
Yeah. And
that they, doesn't make it better.
And what's really going on is they don't understand how to handle that pain. So they're just trying to say something that helps you hopefully feel better, but in turn, really it's just helping them feel better too. And there's no judgment to that, but rather just say, just be aware of that, have grace for that. That does happen very often.
And
well-meaning people.
It's normal.
It's totally normal.
Yeah.
But we need people to help us carry our pain. We need people to help yes. us carry our problems. We need people when we're out of a job to know us well enough to say, how can I help you this week because you're not able to work? What are the practical things you need? You need money? Do you need a job? Do you need help? Do you need a meal? Like that's on a very, you know, practical level. Mm-hmm. But then I think also just having people that are going to continue to walk with you in all of the unique dynamics that come through life mm-hmm. and in life and all the pain that comes, and people that know you and your spouse well enough to know like, whoa, you guys are really going through a hard time. Not only do we need to pray, but we need to create space for you to have time with each other. Can we watch the kids so you guys can have a date night multiple mm-hmm. Times a month? You know, things like that. I think we have to have a space where people know us and we know them, and we can help them just as they help us. And the yeah. church is a very real place. Again, so broken, not perfect, lots of problems, but a place where we can actually live that out, or at least attempt to, depending mm-hmm. upon what community you're in.
Yeah. And it just makes me think, you know, because some churches are better at this than others.
Yeah.
And often it comes down from the leadership. If the leadership has learned how to grieve and acknowledge pain, then they can do a good job leading their church communities in that.
Yeah.
You know, we happen to be a part of a church where the lead pastor and his wife lost twins at birth. They've deeply suffered, and they do a beautiful job sitting with people in pain because they've experienced pain themselves.
Yeah.
Not every church is like that. But, you know, I think the tendency, especially when we're suffering and going through hard things, is it can be really easy to grow bitter at the church, or people in the church not doing enough to help you, or maybe your church is not particularly good at it. And, you know, we've had one therapist that has really helped us through a lot. And in times when I've brought questions to him about like, of just struggling with certain things church people would say or do or not do. And he did a really beautiful job of listening and being compassionate, but then kind of putting the onus back on us.
Oh, I remember. Yeah.
Of, you know, if your church is not great at supporting people going through stuff, maybe it's because you're supposed to help them. Maybe yeah. you're supposed to start something.
Yeah.
Maybe you're supposed to be the one that lines up all the meal trains or that finds a way to bring grief care.
That would not be my gift.
But, you know, I think back to we're not just there to consume.
No.
I think we are there to share each other's loads and burdens and mm-hmm. for others to share ours. And sometimes churches need help with that. And sometimes you might be the one called to initiate helping in that way.
I think that's incredibly wise. And maybe as for a moment of mental brevity, just to take a breath, because we're going through these really heavy things. Speaking of meal trains, it made me think of what everyone makes at a meal train most of the time, which is lasagna. Lasagna seems to be the thing. It's a safe thing. That said, it reminded me of something else, which we did this year for the first time. It's been 16 years of marriage and you finally let me do it. And I want to say thank you. Is I've never been a super huge fan of the Thanksgiving meal. Now, I know some people are just dying right now, like turkey, the tradition, the whole thing. And I respect your disposition.
Guys, turkey's not that good.
It's not that good. I don't really like it anyway. That said, we finally, and Elizabeth was cool with this, we did an Italian Thanksgiving. So all of the food was Italian based and it was so fun. I made lasagna, which is great, which I don't usually make food. So this was a big feat. So if you're like, why does that matter? Yeah.
Now you can make lasagna, pancakes, and eggs and quesadillas.
I can make all sorts of things if I have a recipe and hours and hours and hours. So, I'm not disconnected from it, but anyway, that's a little quick mental break. Yes, we need to have a space. And I think what you just ended on was wonderful, that we might need to fill that gap, which is huge. These last three are going to be pretty quick, but they are still really important. So number seven, to dream with others. Edward, I can't even, I'm so going to butcher this guy's last name. It's Skilbeckix, but I think it's, we'll just say Edward S. He said once, what we dream alone remains a dream, but what we dream with others can become a reality. Oftentimes when we go to church, we start to realize the powerlessness, or rather the impotence, of our individuality and the limits of when we live a really private life. When we live a really private life and we live in these isolated chambers, we often cannot go as far. And that is absolute, you know, psychological truth, but it's biblical truth as well. God designed us to do better together, to function together. Now, and that doesn't even mean marriage. I think that's the same in friendships and relationships across the board, that when you do things together, you go much further. So we do that because we can dream with others. It's a space to meet with others, to dream with others. I'm dreaming currently of going, oh, I maybe should tell you this. I should probably say this. I'm going on a multiple day, massive motorcycle trip with some friends, and just taking, you know, motorcycles, loading up all of our stuff, camping, the whole deal. I'm dreaming of that stuff. And I can do that with other people who are like, oh, I actually want to do that. And they're great people that we want to kick it with. And so anyway, things like that. Like, I know that's a silly one, but that's like, for me, that's so fun to be like, oh, do you want to do this type of thing? Like, yeah, let's go. So if you're interested, please, email intentional, no, just kidding. info@intentionalparents.org. We should just do that. We should just put a whole crew together, have it be a big meetup. So, any thoughts on that before we go to number eight?
Oh, just that, you know, what we all know is that we can only accomplish so much ourselves, but with a whole crew of people with a shared vision, you can accomplish a whole lot more.
Something really practical is unloading the car when you've gone to Costco. Think about how much faster it goes.
It's true.
So, I mean, that's really practical, but I have to tell you, that's where it hits home for us currently.
Mm-hmm. I went to Costco this morning.
Yeah,
you helped me unload.
I did. Went faster. Number eight, to practice for heaven. Heaven, whether you understand this fully or not, or believe this fully or not, is going to be filled with all sorts of different people, races, backgrounds, all sorts of different types of people. And it's good for us to start practicing, to start getting used to living life with other humans in such a deep, beautiful way, because that's really representative of heaven. Going to church is going to be one of the better cardiovascular spiritual exercises available to us. And so I think it's important to remember that when we're preparing for heaven, church is a glimpse of that. It's a moment of that. It's a space where we can go to kind of express this and learn these things. And that's a big deal. Mm-hmm. And lastly, I would just say, and I would love for you to, your final thoughts on this one, is for the pure joy of it. Mm-hmm. For the pure joy of it. So I know that there's going to be moments when church is really hard, but I also know that there's been a lot of moments where I've gone to church, sat, had nothing really to sing, had nothing really to give. I just had to be. And those moments when the Holy Spirit, in his design, in his way, in his activity, meets us in those spaces, there's so much peace and joy. That's not everyone's experience. That's not my experience all the time. And it's not everyone's experience all the time. But even this last week, we had just a time specifically through one of the gatherings, like maybe 10, 15 minutes, where we actually just did some reflections, prayer, Holy Spirit stuff. And it was just amazing the amount of things that Jesus was wanting to do in other people. And so because of that, what was so cool is, you know, the conversations that came, the tears that were shed, the conversations that were had, that of Jesus revealing this deep truth to individuals in a collective space.
So powerful.
I don't know if the same thing would have happened if you were sitting in front of your TV at home, distracted by your kids, trying to make lunch because it's okay, we're trying to do this at the right time. So it's a really important piece. And for the pure joy of it, it's beautiful. And I think this has been, I know for me, it's been very helpful to think through this more deeply. And I think it's a really important part of our families and our lives.
Yeah, I was just thinking when you said for the pure joy of it, our church is putting together a little children's choir for Christmas Eve.
And oh, gosh.
Yeah. I was asking Birdie, yeah, our six-year-old, if she wanted to be in it, you know, not knowing she doesn't like to be in front of people. And she said yes, enthusiastically. And I said, okay, do you know that means you're going to be standing on stage and singing a song? And she goes, yeah, Mom, I just look at everybody else around me and I do what they're doing. And I just laughed. And I mean, joy right so there. Funny. Like, yeah, to see your children so innocently experience that joy with a bunch of other children, with a bunch of other people. There is something about that. And I think just if anything, we hope that maybe this conversation just causes you to think a little bit more intentionally. It's what we're all about.
Yes.
Is that it's more than just something your parents did or dragged you to. There is so much more to it. And there's such a deeper why. And we really are showing our kids something by the faithfulness of week in and week out. We are gifting them a community of people that they can do life with too, and showing them a rhythm of life that is really beautiful and is really healthy and is a way that God showed us to live. And again, as we've said a million times, it's flawed, and it might take you a while to find a church that feels healthy and good and a good place for your family. And we know that that's hard. Maybe we should do a whole episode on how to find a church.
Pray.
But before you even find one, I think it's important that you know why you're finding one.
Yeah. So our encouragement to you is to pray this through, talk this through. Don't just ignore this. Ask, you know, if you're not going, if not, why not? Ask these questions, and we pray the Lord will bless you on your journey. Thank you for listening to today's podcast. If this podcast has blessed you in any way, here's a few ways that you can partner with us in this ministry. First is to give. Intentional Parents is a nonprofit, and we rely on the generous giving of our partners. So please head over to our website, intentionalparents.org/give, if you would like to become one of our partners through giving. Second is to share it. If this has at all been helpful to you, we encourage you to share it with your friends, your family, and those that you know would be blessed by it. Third is to follow us on social media platforms, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. You can find us on Instagram @intentional_parents. And lastly, if you would head over to iTunes, if you enjoyed today's episode, and leave a review on iTunes, this helps us bring more hope, help, and healing for families.